Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
The weather is finally getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. Washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost like the middleman that passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am so excited. I have two gorgeous lightweight cashmere sweaters coming my way, one camel, one heather gray. I cannot wait to wear them in the warmer months when it's chilly in LA. Throwing them over my shoulders, gonna look so cute. Can't wait. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/judgingmegan for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/judgingmegan to get free shipping and 365 day returns. quince.com/judgingmegan. And now back to the podcast.
Hi, everybody. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. So I'm back again. My guest was kind enough to do a part two with me today. Yesterday didn't go so hot. We could not get internet connection. So I'm praying to God that does not happen again today. And I'm just going to fill you in on a few brief things. I had my surgery. I made it out. I'm doing great. What else did I say yesterday, James? Because I'm repeating the story again. Oh, don't ever watch the movie Saltburn.
I have to second that. I'm sorry.
Okay, I made the mistake of watching the movie Saltburn because I was like, what could be so bad? I will never get that image out of my head. So please, I repeat, I've finished everything on Netflix and Bravo and every network that you can possibly imagine. And I'm all TV'd out, and I'm actually, today is my first day I'm going to be picking up my kids from school. I feel very grateful to be on the other side. I'm still kind of sore from the surgery, but I'm doing great. So thank you everyone for your well wishes. Last thing, please, if you're so inclined and you listen or you're a new listener, I always appreciate the reviews on Apple. It really helps people find me. I'm lucky enough and fortunate enough to be a top 200 Apple podcaster in the health and fitness category and EDU, which I'm very, very grateful for. But I'm always looking to grow my show and get up higher in the rankings. I've been doing this almost 4 years, which is shocking. and just so grateful to you. So if you can take 2 seconds of your time and leave me an Apple review or a Spotify review, I would really, really appreciate it. So thank you, listeners.
We've all been put here for a reason, and we all deserve acceptance.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age, and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
I'm going to introduce my guest right now. James Francis is an author. He's also a speaker and an entrepreneur. He is the author of There's Coffee in the Fridge, One Man's Journey Through Anxiety and Depression. And I am just so grateful to have you on the show. How's the intro today compared to yesterday? Can you tell I'm a little bit less frazzled, James?
For sure. Yeah. And again, congratulations on your surgery. I'm glad things are going well. You look great.
Oh, thank you so much. Yesterday, the dog was like in the kitchen eating trash. I couldn't get the internet to work. But I'm just so grateful to you for, number one, your book and putting men's mental health and suicide prevention at the forefront of people's minds. If you come to this podcast, you know I really talk a lot about mental health and my own struggles with my depression and trauma stemming from my childhood. James has been kind enough to come on today to talk about his story. So we're just going to start kind of where you're from, and we'll go from there. So tell me a little bit about where you're from.
Yeah, appreciate it. I grew up on Long Island in New York, and so just outside of Manhattan. And I live in Connecticut, where I've lived for almost 30 years.
Wow. Okay. That's a long time. And Connecticut's the most beautiful state. And I lived there briefly and I just loved it. Nice. I don't miss the cold weather though. I'm going to tell you that. I'm a California girl for sure.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like your childhood. Did you start having issues with kind of depression and things in childhood, and it kind of peaked in adulthood? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, great question. Part of what I talk about in the book is the learning, right? Going back and learning about who I really am and what's inside of me and what makes me tick. So I started to experience pretty serious bouts of depression at 12. At least that's my earliest memory. And my first suicide ideation was at 12. And it's a story that I detail in the book where I wake up one day and I cut school and I spend the day in this abandoned boat that we had in our backyard, basically trying to figure out how to kill myself because I just was feeling so empty and lost. And I didn't realize until I was 42 or 43 that where that trauma stemmed from. And I also, both of my parents were diagnosed with depression, right? So I was predisposed to that genetically. There was suicide on both sides of the family. Historically going back. And so those things are in you, right? For me, I've had to go back and learn what ultimately was the root cause, right? What those traumas were. But as a kid, I masked that unhappiness. I was a really accomplished athlete, and, all of that was masked whenever I was engaged in an athletic endeavor. And ultimately, you know, that continued through college. I got a scholarship to play lacrosse in college. And so the unhappiness that I was feeling emotionally, I could check that at the sideline when I went on the field. And I got all of my accolades and all my positive feedback in the world, mostly from athletics. And so not tapping into the emotion of the world as a guy was something habitually that I learned very early. And it continued into my adulthood.
It's interesting. So depression, it's obviously hereditary many times. There was a major depression on my dad's side. Not as much on my mom's side, but to be a young boy, especially, and dealing, and an athlete, right? Boys are taught at a very young age, man up, don't talk about your problems. A great athlete or a kid that's, you know, taught to play sports, it's so competitive. It's a great outlet for your brain, right? Mm-hmm. For me, mine was acting and dancing and singing. That was my outlet. That was my escape as a child. But when you are already, you already have those cards against you as a boy, like stacked against you, where it's like you cannot talk about what's going on. And then to be 12 on like the verge of puberty or in puberty and not be able to tell someone I'm struggling and to be having suicidal ideations. What, and I'm assuming you didn't go talk to anyone, correct?
No. I mean, that was, you know, the mid 70s, and it it was not something that happened. Although I will tell you that my mom brought me to a psychiatrist at that point. I was either 11 or 12. She brought me to a psychiatrist because I was so down. So she did try, which was unusual for that time period, you know. But like you said, it's just not something you talked about, right? I was afraid. I didn't want to be labeled. I was also terrified of men. So I've had this sort of both sides of the fence, right? I had men really giving me a lot of accolades and loving me because of my athletic abilities. At the same time, I could not talk to men. I was terrified of men. And I never really understood why. I do now, but I didn't understand why. And so this trauma feeds on itself as you move forward in life and get older. The interesting thing is that my son, he's 25 now. And so raising a boy, which I was terrified to do, and I talk about that in the book as well, but raising a son who was emotionally tapped into his feelings and talked about his feelings, just because that's who he is, and because my wife and I fostered that, I saw myself in him almost every day, right? The ability for him to actually verbalize what he's feeling in his life at that same age, 10, 11, 12, 13, was shocking to me because I felt the same way, but I had nobody to go to. I had no outlet for that. And I also didn't have the language for it.
Well, I mean, that's one thing. And that's why we're fortunate that we have you and, you know, people that are like, that's why I do what I do, that want to talk about mental health and struggles. So the younger generations, I mean, our suicide rates are at an all-time high, and especially in young boys and teens. And they don't, you know, having a parent that struggled with depression, it is scary. She's 14 and she just turned 14. And I worry about her all the time. I have a 14 and a 10-year-old. I don't worry as much about my 10-year-old, but I see things in my 14-year-old. And it's like, if you know that you struggled at that age, that's your biggest fear as a parent, right? I mean, we just want our kids to like be okay. Yeah, I mean, 100%. That's every day I pray. I'm like, please just let her be okay. I worry at night. I mean, we never stop worrying, right?
Yeah.
So they are lucky that at least now it's normal for people to ask for help or talk about their depression. Or, you know, I know that you're big on TikTok. I forgot to mention my beautiful niece Maeve followed you on TikTok, and she sent your information to me. So you really have a hold on a younger audience and kids, because she's only like 20 years old. So that's great. So thank you for doing that.
No, you're welcome. And I'm glad she found it, because it's been really amazing over the last couple of weeks since that has sort of gone viral.
What is your TikTok and your Instagram? Like, where can people follow you? I should mention
that. Everything is There's Coffee in the Fridge. So the TikTok is There's Coffee in the Fridge. My website is there'scoffeeinthefridge.com. So it follows the title of the book.
Okay. Thanks for giving that info. So let's kind of skip ahead. So we're going to find out like a little bit more about the fear of men, but you go off to college and kind of like have a life. And I hate to skip ahead, but, you know, being a lacrosse player, I mean, I grew up on the East Coast. Actually, lacrosse is now a sport out here and people are more into it. But, you know, that's like really a boys club, lacrosse as a sport. So I can't imagine the pressure of being a college athlete and just not being able to talk about how you were feeling and struggling with this massive amount of pain that you were dealing with. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I met my wife in college, actually in my second year of college. So my first year was very rough. I was experiencing a depression, and I hadn't experienced a depression for probably 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I was in it. I was in a depressive episode for about 4 months in my spring of my freshman year of college. And so lacrosse is a spring; it's a year-round sport, but in the spring you're in season, and the only thing that kept me alive was going to practice every day. If I did not have practice, I absolutely would not have survived. In fact, we played a big game against Cornell and we won the game. It was the first time our school had ever beaten Cornell. It was kind of a big deal.
What school? And, what school did you go to?
I went to Adelphi University. It's a small school on Long Island.
Yeah, that's huge, beating Cornell.
It was big, yeah. I mean, Adelphi at that time was a Division I program, so we were a top 10 lacrosse school in the country, and so we were playing very high level. But we beat Cornell, huge deal. Everybody was celebrating, and I remember we went to the bar after, and it was just phenomenal. I left that bar that night, so now I'm 18 years old. I was so lonely and empty. I went back to the lacrosse field and I sat on the edge of the field, and the Long Island Railroad runs alongside the school, that runs alongside the campus, and a train went by, and I just thought, okay, I'm going to go jump in front of a train. I've had enough of this. And that was one of the worst episodes I've ever had. I've had 4 or 5 that I can remember that were that bad, but, that episode was so bad and I felt so empty. At the end of the season, I actually quit school. And so not having an outlet or the ability to talk about it or the fear of whatever might happen as a result of that really pushed me down a bad path. And so I quit school and I took some time off from school for about 6 months. And then I ultimately went back and they rewarded me my scholarship back. And it worked out well. I met my wife in the spring of the following year, and I didn't have a depressive episode for probably 5 years after that. And, but when it came back in a huge way. And
were you diagnosed or seeing anybody about that episode with the train? No. So you were, this was still at a time where you were just like holding that in. There's nothing more scary than feeling that way, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's out of body experience. I understand. It's really awful.
Yeah, it is. It's an isolation. And this is something that I feel for people because the TikTok thing is important because we posted a video on TikTok. It went viral. Well over 1 million people have watched it. I have received hundreds of emails from people. Mm-hmm. People like your niece in their early 20s, mid to late 20s, telling me stories about their uncles and their fathers and their brothers who have committed suicide and their own suicide ideation. And what I'm trying to do with this book is start a conversation. Like, it's okay to say, you know what, man, I am so sad. I am so broken. I just need to talk about it. And that is what I've found in my interactions over the last 3 or 4 weeks on TikTok is people just want an outlet to talk about it. And so that's ultimately why I wrote my story, because I do want people to talk about it, because when you start to talk to somebody about this issue, it sort of takes the air out of the balloon. It's like, oh, it's okay. Like, you're not going to judge me. You're going to hear what I have to say, and maybe you can help me get help. And maybe I just need you to listen, but let's start that conversation.
But don't you think too, like, I'm just going to use myself as an example. I'm very forthright about my own struggles and that I was suicidal in 2020, 2021. And you know, I never had an attempt, but I have been very
forthright with my struggles with my depression and like trauma, dealing with trauma from a young age. And I think that people are so afraid to say something because it will forever change the trajectory of their life. Mm. Like for me, and I'm assuming for you, like I'm forever kind of that girl. Like if I walk around, I live in a pretty small town, even though I live in LA, I live in a beach community. And I am aware of the fact that people know who I am. I've been written up in a magazine and I have a podcast and, you know, like I know that people go, oh, that girl is crazy, or that girl, you know, was suicidal, or that girl. And that is kind of a hard thing because that's just like a part of my story. And I wonder if you feel the same way, because I'm not that girl. I'm so much more than that girl. I'm funny and I'm fun and I'm a mom. And that just isn't, that part of my life doesn't define me anymore. And that's why I kind of came forward to share my story. And I hope that kids like, or young people that might be listening, or people, anybody that listens to you, understands that it's just like a portion of our story. And it doesn't mean that I don't still struggle with thoughts still, but now I have kind of tools in my little toolbox, you know, to kind of get myself out of these thoughts. So I would love to know how you feel about that. Do you feel like, hi, I'm James, and like, this is what people, or do you just not care? Because it's impossible to be, I say I don't care, but honestly, I'm going to be real. I do care. Like, it's hard sometimes knowing that there's eyeballs or people thinking things about me. I'm human. How do you feel about that?
So first of all, what I've crossed the Rubicon in understanding that it takes a lot more guts to say, I've got a mental illness and I'm struggling, than it does to sort of grin and bear it. Right. Mm-hmm. So 100%. kudos to you for doing what you're doing, because you're doing the work that needs to be done, right, to say, I've got the courage to do this. So that's awesome. When I came out of the hospital, so I attempted suicide, wound up in the hospital, spent a few weeks in the hospital, in a mental institution, so that I didn't hurt myself or anybody else.
When was this? I know we're kind of like jumping all over the place. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No worries. That was in May of 2005. In the book, I detail as much as I can remember that weekend that my wife had to make the choice to send me to Yale Psych or find another facility. We went to Yale Psych. It was a disaster. She took me out of there. They actually made her sign a release saying, we are totally indemnified from anything that this guy's going to do if you take him home. They took me home. My sister was here. They drugged me. I spent 4 days in the bed, and then they found a facility for me called Silver Hill here in Connecticut. Anyway, I came out of the hospital and we're in the car driving home. And my wife says, listen, and I live in a very small town. It's Madison, Connecticut, 18,000 people. I was the president of the Youth Lacrosse Association. My wife was the president of the local arts facility. So everybody knows us, right? So we come out of the hospital, we're in the car. She's like, listen, we got a couple of options here about how we want to proceed. You can either say you were on a business trip, which is plausible, right? And nobody would ever know. Or, you know, you were sick in the hospital with something, but we don't need to talk about what it is. Or we can be honest about this and tell people that this is what it is, right? This is not who you are. It's part of part of your life. And so that's what we chose to do. And so I will tell you that I understand and I agree. The first probably 6 months, it was difficult, because I knew people were judging me and I knew that people were talking behind my back or whatever. Ultimately, I do not care, because what I have found is, in talking about it, everybody's got something, right? Either for themselves or with somebody in their life. And it opens up the opportunity for them to say, hey, you know what? My kid, and I work with guys, with people now that are fairly closed off and fairly toxic. And in their own life, right? But when you start talking to them about this stuff, they all know I've written this book. I've had these guys call me and say, you know what? My daughter is struggling. What do I do? And so that to me is just the miracle of stepping forward and saying, hey, I get it. You can call me crazy, whatever you want to do, but this is the reality of what we're living in right now.
Okay. So I do want to say the following, audience, if you're listening right now, we had, I don't know, James is a saint. I mean, he truly is. This is his third time coming back with me. So we recorded the first half of the podcast a week ago. So if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm wearing a different outfit. We look different. We're getting this done today. But in all seriousness, we left off on a piece about people making judgments on your history. And James is going to finish that thought for me. But if you do notice a few inconsistencies in the podcast and storytelling, that's because we recorded this like over a week ago originally. And maybe I accidentally left a question or two out, and I apologize for that. But desperate to get this story out, and so grateful to meet this human being. So James, why don't you finish your thought from over a week ago? Okay.
That's great. And I'm also wearing a different outfit. So
okay. Well, everyone was wondering.
Yeah. we were talking about the concern of coming out and admitting you have a mental health issue, and the judgments that come at you from that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's true. It is something that was in the back of my head. It took me a few months to get really comfortable with that, right? The point that I wanted to make that I think is really interesting is that, you know, you're in a life and you're surrounded by people that you interact with on a regular basis. You don't realize how toxic some of those people can be. Mm-hmm. I clearly was toxic, right? So I was part of the problem. But coming out of the other side, right, coming out through after my breakthrough, I decided, and my wife and I both decided, we were going to be completely out and transparent about what had happened. And you know, it is what it is. The point that I wanted to make is, it's interesting that people that leave, right?
Oh, yes.
The toxic people that just disappear because it's too close to home or whatever. And then even more interesting are the people that come into your life.
Yes. Right?
And the blessings and the, you know, I don't want to be cliche about it, but there are so many people that want to connect in a real way. And so the judgment just falls away, because if somebody's going to judge, okay, you know, have fun, go judge, right? You and I are not meant to be in the world together. And that's fine. But the people that came into my life, no judgment at all, right? I mean, it actually is pretty magical when that happens.
Okay. So I have to pipe in on this, what you're saying right now, because it's an excellent point. You don't know this, but my listeners do, that part of my breakdown was because I went through this really bad friend breakup with these women, and they were horrible to me. And I hold myself accountable, because, you know, there takes two to tango in everything in life, but I know in the bottom of my heart, I did not deserve the way it was treated. And after therapy, talking to people, one of the ringleaders is just a very unhappy person. Like, you can't be incredibly cruel to people in life and do the things that some of these women did to me and be happy. Like, you just can't. It doesn't. Sure. So when I talk to my priest, for example, because I do credit him for helping me so much through this. He was like, pray for them. And I am a spiritual person. My spirituality is very, very important to me. So I want to say that. But the people, James, that came into my life afterwards, and you know, I mean, starting this podcast, you know, you have your platform, you're an entrepreneur, all the things that happened, I am so incredibly grateful for my stumbles in life and my opportunities and my friends that I have now. I keep it very small, but you know, my childhood friends, I'm still best friends with my friends from college. So I look to that, and I really appreciate you stating that point, because I do know that I have listeners that struggle with their mental health. And I always like to remind them every episode or every post that I do that you don't know what's going to happen 5 years from now or a year from now or 6 months from now. Yeah. And I like to say too, I haven't, and maybe you haven't met one of your best friends in life.
100%.
Right. So I just want to say that. And then I want to let you say what you were going to say if you had something else.
Yeah, no, I would just confirm that statement. Actually, one of the videos that went viral of me on TikTok is me talking about having a day like today. If you had said to me 20 years ago, right, that I could have a day like today, I would never have believed you. I kind of hung my hat on that happening at some point, right? And that was the inspiration that took me through the evolution and the learning. But having a day like today is, I just would never have been able to get my head around it, but it is real and I'm living it, right? So that is what's really incredible about that process of healing, is at some point you're going to have a day like today, right? And it's incredible. That's what you need to live for.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's so true. And like we said, I think when we recorded a week ago in different outfits, not every day is easy. Like when you're somebody that struggled with lifelong depression or, you know, I don't say mental illness. This is just me, because I don't, even though technically I was diagnosed with complex PTSD stemming from my trauma in my childhood. Mm-hmm. I think of it as like, not a superpower, but like not an illness, just like kind of like somebody says you're handicapped. You don't say that. You say you're handicapable. Right. It's just like the way our brains work differently. I say that all the time, you know, and we just need to work around certain parts of our brains. And
I agree.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you, once you, because I don't like to focus on the 2005 incident, but I do want to focus on, you know, how you found yourself out of moving on and getting help and, you know, your wife and how this all impacted your family and your relationships, you know, that were good and how people did come into your life, if you're okay talking about that.
Yeah, of course. I was at the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. I had tried to eliminate myself from the planet. That I don't think you can get lower than that other than actually accomplishing that, right? So mm-hmm. I was broken. I was in the hospital. I was on medication. I had basically given up my life. I had said, I don't want to do this anymore, to the point where I wanted to kill myself. And so I spent this time in the hospital learning about being calm. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen right away, right? This mm-hmm. was just basically a 2-3 week period where they were trying to get my medication right so that I didn't hurt myself or anybody else. But at the same time, I was learning about things like meditation and talking about things that you feel and writing in a journal and all of the things that I talk about in the book. And so that was the start of that process. And I realized, holy shit, I can actually be calm. And when I had tried to suicide, I hadn't slept for more than 2 hours for probably three weeks. I was a mess.
You were in a deep manic episode, I'm assuming.
Huge yeah. depressive episode. Worst 2 or 3 depressive episodes I've ever experienced in my life. And so I was at the bottom. When I came out of the hospital, my wife and I had a very poignant conversation about what we were going to do next. And she's like, look, I mean, we both didn't know if our marriage was going to last, if our relationship would last. That's a really hard thing to get through. But that also didn't matter at that point. It was like, I'm alive. I've got a chance to reset, right? And that's what I'm going to do. And so I dove into really trying to understand who I was and what I was about and what made me tick. And that process took me down this path of exploring childhood trauma, which I had never done before, right? And uncovering things that were in my DNA, right? At a cellular level, mm-hmm. that were impacting me and I was carrying around. And mm-hmm. so as I started to dig into that, I was like, well, you know what? I really want to understand what was that 6-year-old. So in the book, I mentioned this and I don't get into a lot of detail about it, but I was sexually molested at 6. Mm-hmm. It happened a few more times until I was about 11. And it affected my entire life. It literally affected my entire being. Every interaction I had with a woman after that was impacted. Every interaction I had with a man, because that the molester was a man, mm-hmm. it was impacted by that. And so I carried that every single day. And I really wanted to understand what is that about? Like, what the hell is that? Why? And I had to sit with that 6-year-old kid, right? And say to him, you're safe, dude. You're good. This was not your fault.
Isn't that like the best thing ever? Because you're an ace. Obviously, I'm an ace also. Adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot about them. So that sticks with you. But I've had quite a few survivors of you know, being molested as children, boys and girls, women and men. Mm-hmm. And this is all something that so heavily is blaming themselves. So what happened to you is so common. I think you mentioned last week that you couldn't look people in the eye.
Yeah.
Like, this is all like signs to go backwards to.
Yeah.
Like, why? And so once you sat there with your 6-year-old self and you said, hey, I mean, isn't that such an amazing gift that we have that we as people, because I like myself, not all the time. I'm a big giant pain in the ass. I don't know how I've been married so long. I'm not going to lie. And people can tell you that about me, but I do like myself like a little bit, maybe more and more as I get older.
That's great.
Do you like yourself? I mean, are you like a work in progress like we all are?
Well, yeah, of course, always. I'll always be a work in progress. But no, I absolutely love myself. I think that I bring so much into every interaction in the world. It's great. It feels
but
great.
It's like, it's such a gift, and it's makes me emotional because I did learn that in therapy. That's one of the things I learned was like, you know, Megan, go back to your young self. At three when I, or I was two when my sister passed away and basically in front of me, and hug that little girl and talk to her. And I hope that you do that too. And I think that my listeners, if you're listening, I think that's why you do this and I do this is so you know, if you are struggling right now with suicidal ideations or you have attempted or any of these things, you're depressed, just to take a step backwards. And sometimes I do this is I'll make a list of things that I like about my day that might go well or something I like about myself to remind myself that I'm worthy. And I think it's an important thing that I try to do in life.
Yeah, it's a great practice. I agree. I write something that I'm grateful for every morning. It's just simple. I'm grateful for my legs. I'm grateful for the sky, whatever it is. And it's just an intention that says, hey, I am focusing on what is important to me. You know, so going back to the embracing of the child, right? The person that was harmed and treating them with love and security and making sure they know they're safe. The hardest thing that I had to do, the single hardest thing I had to do in this entire process was to forgive myself. So I had put myself in multiple situations because of the abuse that I feel like I should have been able to control, right? Which is crazy. When you're a 6-year-old, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. But then I was also attacked when I was 17. I was older, physically attacked by 4 people. I detail that story in the book. And I was so angry with myself for so long for putting myself on that street at that time. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to get over that and to forgive myself for putting myself in that situation. So that the ability to say, I forgive you to somebody that abuses you or wrongs you is difficult, right? Mm-hmm. But for me, the hardest part was forgiving myself.
And honestly, like I talk a lot about forgiveness. I don't really truly believe that we have to forgive everybody. That's just how I feel in life. I mean, I feel like it's more important to get to a place where you can live with it within yourself, but like disgusting behavior and ill people that are going to ruin a child's life. I'm sorry. I don't. And that's just my personal opinion in life. Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah,
I have done forgiveness exercises with people, my father especially, because I could never really sit and have a conversation with him that was a two-way discussion, right? Mm-hmm. And I have had conversations with him in writing where he was never in the room, never saw it, never felt it. But to me, and I think this is important, that is the same as having that conversation.
100%. Right?
Yeah. So I can write all that out and throw it in the fireplace if I want, but I have now released that from my filters and it's out in the world and I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. I think for my listeners, it's really important. I love that you're, you know, using TikTok because there's so much. I mean, I think I might have mentioned it already on this episode. I don't know how I feel about social media much of the time. I think it's really bad in so many ways, but if it's around and it's going to be here, why not talk more about mental health and positive things, you know, because that's what we need. We don't need I have a mother of little girls and one's 14 and, you know, having to have her look at filters of what people look like 24 hours a day. You know, I blame myself because I got her a phone in 6th grade. I was one of the last moms to do it. And I've just seen a decline, you know, in how she feels about herself and all this stuff. But I think what you do and how if we could find a way to just promote social media with like positive images and positive, like talking about positive, you know, messages of why you matter and seeing your TikTok, which can you tell my audience again what it's called? I've asked you like 3 times now. Sorry.
Yeah, no. The TikTok is There's Coffee in the Fridge. That's what the page is. This is my website is there'scoffeeinthefridge.com. Instagram, there's coffee in the fridge. And I agree with you. I would not want to be a kid right now. The social media influences are just horrific. There is this component of it, though, like you said, that is positive, right? And so there's this whole community on TikTok talking about mental health in such a positive way. It blew my mind. I never knew it existed. And the conversations that I'm having with people right now on email because of the TikTok is just, it's mind-boggling. And it's incredible. So
what do you say to somebody? And then I'm going to kind of go backwards a little bit again. But so I had somebody, and I'll just use this example, a year ago. Maybe it was like even longer ago. I've been doing this almost 4 years, this podcast. And in the beginning, I had a young girl reach out to me, and she was talking about ending her life. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I didn't even know what I was doing as a podcaster, much less I'm not a doctor. I was terrified because she was telling me she was done. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, listen, like I gave her all the information of places to go because I didn't know what to say. But yeah. I'm assuming you have that all the time where people reach out to you and ask you like, or talk about their struggles. What do you do in a situation like that?
So the first thing I do is tell people I'm not a professional, right? Which you also said. I think that's really important. I don't give medical advice. I never want to cross that line. Mm-hmm. And you know, right, from your experiences that these are all individual things, right? Mm-hmm. My experience with depression and anxiety is different from yours, et cetera. So I think that's really important. The first thing I do is tell people to call 988. That's the National Mental Health Hotline. It will be answered 24/7, no matter what state you're in. Please contact this phone number. I have actually called that number with somebody else on the phone and created a conference link and got off the phone. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, you know, I've been on the phone with people for hours, literally talking them off the ledge. I just got a chill.
Well, that must make you feel so good because here's the thing. It's like, you know, doing what you do and what I do, like I do this for selfish reasons sometimes because I love helping people. It is the only thing I found in life that has given me hope and happiness, really true happiness. Like no bag or shoe is going to do it for me anymore. It's like, I'm a woman. I'm sorry, James. but you know what I'm saying? It's like that is what life is all about. That's what you are supposed to have gone through all of these things to get to where you are now. I really believe that. That's just my belief. You know,
I agree. It's all about that connection. So if it becomes a situation where I can't get somebody to move to the next step, I try to ask them to give me a contact information for somebody in their life that I can call.
Okay.
And then I can get that person involved, right? So that I'm out of it. But that is ultimately what needs to happen, right? Other people in somebody's life need to know that this person is really struggling, like to the point that they're going to leave the planet. You know, I suffered from depression for a long time. My wife never really understood that I was going to kill myself, like that I was literally going to end my life. Mm-hmm. And if somebody had called her and said, hey, I just had a conversation with James. He's going to kill himself. Yeah. Then she would have acted immediately, right? And so that's the next thing for me. If I can't get them to calm down and dial 988 or get in touch with a professional, I find out who's in their life that I can call to provide them with the support. I think the important thing for me is because there's so much activity and so much volume, I can't get involved in other people's struggles. I can help support them. I can provide them with some love, but I ultimately can't fix them, right? Everybody has to fix themselves. And I think that's really important.
100%. So once you got back to like, you started to realize that, you know, you getting therapy, being on medication, no longer blaming yourself. You talked about a little bit last week on how you're an entrepreneur. And like, I'm assuming using your business to kind of like move forward your messaging. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's a complex question and answer. I ran a mindfulness company for a number of years, right? So after I got out of the hospital and I sort of started going back to work, I decided to go into the well-being space. And so I found myself at a company that, well, I ran a sales division for Weight Watchers. So health-related, helping people get healthy. And then I ran a mindfulness company for a couple of years. And I ultimately now am back in the insurance business, right? It's really finance related. But what I have done is I've brought my approach to life into the boardroom, right? So I have taught people I work with how to meditate. Let's start the meeting with 30-second meditation, you know? And sometimes people are like, you know what? I don't want to engage, and that's cool. So my business life, the way that I make a living on a daily basis is what it is, but I bring myself into that. And so I can't help but help and coach and teach and bring people together in that environment. So I'm not like in the wellness space anymore. Mm-hmm. But I am bringing what I do into the space that I occupy.
I think that's huge. I mean, I worked in corporate America for 15 years of my life, and the amount of stress, because I was in sales, was so bad that I just would constantly see people, because I was always just a number, you know? I mean, people in sales in particular, real estate, finance. I've actually had, you talked about working on Wall Street. I had another successful podcaster, I should connect you both, that was on Wall Street, and he talked about, you know, this amount of stress and what it did to him. So if you're already dealing with a history like he was, like you were, or you were as a child, and then you work in a situation like that where you're always like go, 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 go. Yep. That's what is needed in this world, is just more taking a step back. You can still be in business, but if you take a step back and you do things like journaling, meditation, you know, talking to your employees, like the things that are so simple. And if they're not, they don't want to talk about it, fine. Like they don't have to do it. But I'm sure there's somebody, and you've probably found that in that room, that is like, wow, I needed this. Thank you. You know, I see my husband who's in a very stressful career. He goes on these calls all the time, and I listen to them because I used to be on these calls all the time too. But the man that does these coaching calls is very smart, and I listen to the things he says, and it's exactly what is needed, you know? Yeah. So I appreciate that you do that. I think that's really important. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that too. I worked for a private equity firm, and I ran a company in South Carolina. So I was commuting back and forth Monday to Thursday. And, you know, it was a very old school sort of Christian dominated environment. Right. Mm-hmm. So here I come from the Northeast, this liberal guy who's now, you know, totally evolved in the world. And I walk into this room, a couple hundred people, and I'm like, so I'd like to institute meditation. And everybody said, no. Some people said it's against my religion. I said, okay, whatever. So
I'm not trying to laugh, but I lived in Charleston, South Carolina, and all my whole family's there, a lot of my family. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Because I'm also an East Coaster Yankee, and it's very different.
So the first time we did it, three people showed up. But after 30 days, that room was filled, 75, 80 people. We did it twice a week. And then we instituted walking meditation. People were like, I don't want to meditate. I was like, well, how about we go walk around the building for 10 minutes? Mm-hmm. And that's what we did, right? So that became a walking meditation. And the point is, you got to meet people where they are, right? And everybody wants that connection. They just have never experienced it in the workplace, so they don't really know what to do. Like, well, what do you mean, you know? And so, like, I start Monday morning meetings with what'd you do this weekend, you know? Like, tell me something different. And you can if you want to share. And if you don't want to share, that's cool too. But people like look at me like I have four heads. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you know, you have a three-year-old son, don't you? So what did you guys do this weekend? And it's a totally foreign concept to people to be able to bring themselves into the workplace. But that's what needs to happen in order for teams to really function collaboratively, creatively, and to develop trust.
Do you see a success rate? I'm just curious about, you know, there's a very famous doctor that came on the podcast. His name is Dr. Mark Williams, and he's an MIT professor, and he talked about the human connection and how we've, as a species, like drop that human connection. And it's all about, again, like devices and all these things and texting, like not actually talking on the phone, but texting. Right. And how, like, we need this as human beings. So I'm wondering, have you seen, like, business do better from this? I'm just curious.
100%. Yeah. I mean, so I can tell you from my own personal experience, right? Mm-hmm. I've always been successful. But after I broke down and then rebuilt myself, I have been more successful in the last 15 years than I ever could have imagined. And it's all about the time that I spend with people, really getting to know them and interacting with them in a real way. Some of it too is I don't really give a shit about the money. I don't care. Like, mm-hmm. I really want to live positive experiences with people. And once you eliminate that, you break that down, and that's really what your focus is, you are more creative. Your ability to solve problems increases dramatically. Your ability to focus increases dramatically. You feel better. You sleep better. It's all tied together, you know?
I think you've got something here. I think, like, this is like a nationwide program that needs to be rolled out for businesses. Yeah. I mean, I really believe that. I mean, I think that just being in corporate America and just on the grind of it, and then struggling with like such bad panic attacks, like I did, where I had to like take a break and I couldn't. I wonder sometimes if it would have been handled different if we had across the board, you know, in our country, like more of exactly what you're talking about. Cause it's so important, I think, to, especially the exercise component too. Yeah. It's right. Huge. The walking is one of the best things you can do for your mind.
Oh yeah. And I tell people all the time, just go outside and breathe.
Yeah.
You know, my son lives in Sweden, and he works for a video game development company. And every day in Sweden, they have a thing called fika in the afternoon. I think it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, where the entire country basically shuts down for 15 to 20 minutes to have a coffee break. And they're not allowed to talk about business. They just sit around talking to each other about life and whatever is going on. And that's a connection that we need sorely in America, you know? You know, and to your point about stress, I work in a very stressful environment. I own a company with some partners. It's crazy, right? It's a startup. We're working. We're all driven type A people. At the end of the day, though, I tell people all the time, like, nobody's going to die on the table here, right? If something doesn't get done, nobody's going to die. So everybody just relax, take a couple of breaths. It's all going to be good, you know, because it really isn't that important at the end of the day. Like, I want to deliver a good work product. I want to develop a good company. But is somebody going to drop dead because, you know, we didn't deliver a proposal at a specific time? No, they're not. And
I think that Sweden has it right in so many ways. I mean, you hear about Sweden. I'm like, can I go to Sweden? I mean, they just, it seems like they have it right in so many ways. So for the sake of time, and because you've been here literally three separate occasions, I just want to ask you what are two things that you have learned from your struggles that you could tell somebody? It could even be one thing that is struggling right now.
That I think the most important thing is honesty. And it's not necessarily honesty with anybody else, but it's honesty with yourself about what is real to you and what is really happening in your life. Everybody talks about who they want to be. And I really think the focus needs to be on how you want to be, not who you want to be. The who will follow, right? But the how is, I just want to live an honest existence. I want to be honest about every single freaking thing, period. And I think that's important. Like, saying to yourself, the way that you acted yesterday was not good. Is that how you want to be? And I think that honesty really starts with you, and then it feeds out from there. And it goes into every interaction you have in life. But that is the one thing that I would really say is the most important thing, is living an honest existence. The second thing would be, if I had to pick two, it would really be meditation. And I don't teach meditation in a way that, you know, like a monk might do meditation on the mountains in Tibet. It really is as simple as shutting down for a minute, minute and a half, 3 minutes, whatever time you can afford, to really just calm yourself down. And you can put on a song and meditate to a song, keep it simple. But I do think that if we all meditated for a generation, we would eliminate war. Because if you're in a place where you are achieving that level of calm and peace, and you get used to that, you don't want anything else in your life, right? You so want true. That calmness. So those are the two things I would say.
Okay. Where, for the last time, the best way to reach you, if I have a listener that wants to reach out.
Yeah, there's coffeeinthefridge.com is the website. You can communicate to me through that. You can email me at there'scoffeeinthefridge@gmail.com. The book is available on Barnes & Noble. It's available on Amazon. You can also buy it off of my website. And then if you stumble on my TikTok page and you want to communicate with me there, you can send me a direct message.
Okay. James, thank you so much. I'm so honored to have had these three separate occasions to meet you. Hopefully we meet again. In closing, everyone, you know, I used to say, be happy by making other people happy for a few years, because that's what my dad used to say all the time. And then I recently changed it, because on my Instagram, I always say, I always use this hashtag every post I do, just to talk about, you know, the exact things that we talked about in this episode, which are, you matter, your story matters, keep going. So please do those things. And thank you so much, James. It was an honor to meet you. Take care.
No, Megan, honored to meet you as well. Thank you.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.